The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt back in the free state of Florida for the third consecutive broadcast. I'll be leaving for the Beltway tonight after a couple more events at the Alliance Defending Freedom, annual gathering of lawyers, professors, scholars, law students, and communicators about matters of religious liberty. Governor Ron DeSantis keynoted last night's gathering in a rousing and well-received address that, of course, occurs under the shadow of the repression in Cuba. Cuba's president took to the airwaves yesterday in an effort to quell the rising discontent in his country. His name is Miguel Diaz-Canel, who days ago called on revolutionaries to counter anti-government protests. He acknowledged yesterday a very different tone. Although there's a blackout in Cuba, they have shut down the internet. It is very difficult for news media to report. It appears they continue to struggle with dissent. He was widely criticized across the West, not nearly enough by President Biden and Team Biden, which has been mostly silent since Monday, that his taking to the television is a sign of weakness as the Cuban people prepare to shoot for Saturday and Sunday to take to the streets again. Arrests are widespread. Disappearances are widespread. The dictator said yesterday, we have to gain experience from the disturbances. We also have to carry out a critical analysis of our problem in order to act and overcome and avoid their repetition. That is the language of someone who's backing up against the wall. And we can only hope that it continues. Later today, I will be posting at the Washington Post a column calling on President Biden to please go to Havana and stand with the people of Cuba. Now, you know who didn't stand with the people of Cuba? Black Lives Matter. The organization. Incredibly, last night, Black Lives Matter tweeted out a statement in support of the regime. Now, we've long known that the BLM organization, as opposed to people who simply carry the sign, is a hard left Marxist group. But last night, the mask came off. Black Lives Matter condemns the U.S. federal government's inhuman treatment of Cuba and Cubans and urges it immediately to lift the economic embargo. Without that money, it's hard for Cuba to acquire medical equipment and needed change. This comes in spite of the country's strong medical care and history of lending dozens of doctors to disasters around the world. If you heard Marco Rubio yesterday explain the human rights nightmare of the doctors in slavery program run by Cuba, the BLM people don't care. They're good Marxists. They're out there doing what they need to do to cover up for their people. The people of Cuba are being punished by the U.S. government. No, it's a police state. This is BLM, right? This is the Black Lives Matter movement. And it will never get the stink off. It will never get the stink off of that tweet. And it was widely, widely attacked last night as utterly tone deaf, utterly out of touch, utterly disastrous. And the blowback on Twitter was terrific. Cuba being punished is the language of people completely, completely out of touch with what is happening in Cuba and with basic history. The group said Cuba has been an ally of the oppressed people of African descent and praised the country's effort to protect black revolutionaries like Assata Shakur. Shakur, known as Joanne Chesimard, was convicted of being an accomplice in the 1973 slaying of New Jersey State Trooper Werner Forster, who left behind a wife and three-year-old son. She escaped prison, fled to Cuba, where Fidel Castro granted her asylum. Senator Cruz, the son of a Cuban immigrant, took to Twitter to support Cuba over the weekend. And I believe today will be when all many people come out and say, we now know the reality of Black Lives Matter. Meanwhile, Senator Rubio continued and Senator Cruz continued their effort yesterday to bring attention to the effort by the people of Cuba to be free. Marco Rubio on internet video yesterday, cut number 11.
The situation in Cuba is on the verge of turning into a historic calamity, and it has to be. This calls for a swift and meaningful response. So today I've made four specific asks of the president that I think he needs to move on very quickly. The first is I'm calling for the president to immediately authorize and allocate funding to provide emergency connectivity to the internet for Cuba through balloon-supplied internet coverage. In recent years, American firms have made real strides in telecommunication technologies, including fiberless solutions that can be deployed to remote regions at a relatively short notice. That was done in Puerto Rico in 2017 after Hurricane Maria. Second, I'm calling on the president to instruct Secretary Blinken to convene a meeting of the Permanent Council of the Organization of American States to address this ongoing situation in Cuba. We must lead the effort to gain approval for a strong condemnation of the regime's violence against its own people and a petition to the Inter-American Human Rights Commission to travel to Cuba and begin to document the violations of civil and human rights that have happened and are ongoing. Third, I'm calling on the president to, in accordance with Article 54 of the UN Charter, convene an emergency meeting of the Security Council to fully inform it of the activities that are being undertaken or contemplated by the OAS and what's happening in Cuba in general. And fourth, I'm calling on the president to clearly and publicly communicate to the Cuban regime that it's going to be the policy of the U.S. to regard the weaponization of mass migration, if they weaponize mass migration, against the United States, it will be considered as a hostile act, and it will be met with a swift and appropriate response.
Senator Ted Cruz went on Fox with John Roberts to make similar points. Cut number 12.
Look, that's exactly right. It seems for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the only immigrants on the face of the earth that they don't want to come to America are Cubans. That's the only instance in which the Biden administration is expressing a resistance to people coming here illegally. In my home state of Texas, we have open borders. We have the Biden DHS releasing people, hundreds of thousands of people. We're also seeing, I spoke yesterday with a Texas mayor down on the border who was describing that they're seeing COVID cases skyrocketing as more and more people are being released. And the Biden administration is leaning in even further. But when it comes to Cuba, it's not complicated. Here's what Joe Biden needs to say. The communist dictatorship in Cuba is evil. It is oppressive. They are murderers. They are torturers. And the people want freedom. The American people stand with the Cuban people. And unfortunately, the Biden administration has been lukewarm at best on that simple and clear messaging.
Yeah, the Biden administration checked the box on Monday. President mumbled a statement, put out a one-paragraph statement. It was a great start. I applauded it. And then they've gone radio silence. Senator Cruz continued with John Roberts yesterday. Cut 13. Here's what needs to happen.
We have seen moments when there's uprisings. You know, the Green Revolution in Iran was an example of the people rising up. And Barack Obama was president then. And the Obama administration did then what the Biden administration is doing now, which is giving lukewarm support for the protesters. You know, I'll tell you, John, I want to read to you a text that I got from my mother. Sure. My mother and our families in communications with family friends that are still in Cuba. And here's what one close friend of the family said. Things are much more serious there than what is reported on TV. And this friend of the family described, she says, she has no food, same for almost everyone. Yesterday, she had a bowl of thin soup, nothing more. She was asking for help for the first time. No way to get money into Cuba. Banks are closed. Five protesters were killed in Santiago. Radio stations are being taken over by protesters. Internet shut down. So no further contact available. Matanzas, which is where my dad was born, is a hot spot for COVID. And it sounds as though desperate times are generating desperate measures. This is an inflection point, and America ought to stand up and speak boldly on the side of freedom and against the communist dictatorship. And, you know, your show mentioned a minute ago that the socialists in Congress, the Democrats who are unwilling to condemn the regime. The reason is the Cuban government is a socialist dictatorship, and American socialists don't want to acknowledge the evil and suffering and oppression that Cuban socialists are imposing on the people.
Yeah, I think Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio are terrific. We'll have Senator Rick Scott on later in this hour. That will make Senators Rubio, Cotton, and Scott in 3 days. Later this morning at WashingtonPost.com, I'll have an editorial, a column up calling on President Biden to go to Miami, rally the people, rally attention for this weekend, protect the Cuban demonstrators who will try and take to the streets again this weekend. The only thing the West can do is turn attention in a voluminous way. They've just got to saturate coverage like they did Eastern Europe in 1988 and 1989, like they covered the Pope's visit to Poland a few years earlier, as they covered Yeltsin on the tank in 1991. It is up to the networks. Television networks matter. I can be on the radio all day long. Local television networks in Florida are covering it, of course, completely. The Cuban American community and indeed Latino community generally is covering it. I'll have it in the WashingtonPost.com. But we need the president to lead, and we need Black Lives Matters organization to shut up about how great Cuba is. It's really kind of remarkable. I'm coming right back. In the meantime, head over to adflegal.org/you to support this amazing organization working for freedom for everyone in the United States to pray and lead their life of faith or no faith at all, any way they want. adflegal.org. I'll be right back from Florida, the free state of Florida. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt in the free state of Florida in the Alliance Defending Freedom annual gathering of lawyers. But the free state of Florida local media is the only place you'll find coverage of Cuba except the Hugh Hewitt Show. I've got Senator Rick Scott of the great state of Florida joining me. Good morning, Senator.
Well, I'm glad you're in my state. I hope you enjoy it. It's a little humid right now.
It's a little bit humid, but it's always wonderful to come to the free state of Florida. Senator, I get to watch coverage of Cuba that I do not see on networks. I have an editorial coming out in the Washington Post today, a column urging the president to go to Miami. Should he go to Miami and rally the forces of freedom for the people of Cuba?
Absolutely. Biden needs to, first of all, just show the heck up. I mean, he wants to be part of this, worldwide club. Well, let's use his influence then. Let's get the European Union. Let's get Boris Johnson. Let's get everybody get involved here and say, enough's enough here. These atrocities that have gone on for decades and decades and decades, where now they're beating up peaceful protesters. They're kidnapping all the leaders. We don't know where the leaders are. And then I've heard audio of gunshots by the government forces. So the Biden administration, I mean, Joe Biden, show up, do something. I mean, talk about freedom, liberty, democracy. Do something. He's doing nothing.
I love talking to Senator Rubio and you because I'm sure your offices are the best connected offices in America. Are the protests continuing, or are people hiding in their basements or their huts right now to avoid the secret police?
The protests are continuing, but there are a lot of people that are missing. A lot of people have been kidnapped. So one of the leaders, Jose Daniel Frey, and his 18-year-old son, we don't know where they are. So, they've been trying to shut down the internet with the support of China. So I know that the people are out there. They're saying enough, but they've got to get, more people, more, world leaders out there saying, come on, this is the Castro regime. Can't be doing that. You're a pariah. You're killing your own citizens. Yeah. So, and then you've got Democrats up here, try to blame the United States for what is happening in Cuba. You got Black Lives Matter saying, this is all United States' fault. No, it is the Castro regime's fault. You've got Democrats that have just become socialists that are basically defending the Castro regime. This is the craziest thing that's going on in this country right now.
I read the BLM tweet to the audience in the first segment, and that is the Black Lives Matter organization. It's a hardline Marxist organization, and I am astonished that they sided with the killers in Cuba and the government. And they got a lot of blowback last night, but no one should want to be affiliated with them after this. They're murdering people in Cuba. But Senator Scott, do you expect the rallies to try and surge on the weekend? That's why this Washington Post column I have coming out, I want to focus on the weekend so Western media does its job.
Well, what we've got to do is everybody that believes in democracy and freedom, we've got to get the stories out. We got to get the pictures out. At the leadership press conference on Tuesday, I showed pictures of protesters being arrested by the Castro regime. And then we've got to get this on television. We've got to get this in the papers. I've been telling all the reporters I talked to this week, write about this. I mean, Cuba is the reason that we have instability in Latin America. The instability in Venezuela and in Colombia and in Nicaragua are all caused by what's going on in Cuba. So Cuba, we've got to get freedom and democracy, and we've got to get free and fair elections there. This is our best chance in decades. So stand up. support the freedom fighters in Cuba right now. They need our support.
Are the American television networks, both the big nets and the cable news, doing their jobs?
Of course not. I mean, it seems to me they've all become socialists. I mean, this is what we're supposed to be, the beacon of democracy, of liberty. Show up, talk about what's going on there. Make sure everybody in the world knows the Castro regime is a bunch of thugs that don't believe in anybody having rights. No different than what's going on in communist China, what's going on in Iran, or what's going on in North Korea. There's no human rights. And so don't we want everybody to have the same freedoms we have? If we do, then stand up and talk about it. The media has to do it. Our leaders have to do it. It starts with Joe Biden. Show the heck up and do something.
Yeah. Now, Senator Scott, normally I talk to you about the election cycles and the senator, you're leading the Republican Senatorial Committee, doing a great job at the NRSC. But I think this is going to be an issue everywhere, and not just among Cuban Americans, but among everyone who has felt the hard hand of oppression, whether it is in Eastern Europe, whether it is in Central America, Cuba, of course, Venezuela, of course. Do you agree with that assessment? I think the Democrats not showing up on this and doing this Texas legislator stunt in the middle of a human rights moment of crisis, it's like not covering the fall of the Berlin Wall. We could have Cuba on the cusp of freedom. Am I wrong about that?
Absolutely. This is our best shot in decades. This is the biggest protests in decades. This is our chance to get freedom and democracy, not just for the Cuban people, but also, I mean, this is 90 miles from our shores, but also this will help us in Venezuela and Nicaragua and hopefully stop the attacks in Colombia. So this is our chance. Show up, stand up for freedom, stand up and, you know, just tell people what's going on. We've got to get it all over the world. I tell people, remember that little Syrian boy that died on the beach and they had the picture of his father?
Very sad. Yep.
Everybody saw that. We've got to show all the things that are happening in Cuba right now. Who's being kidnapped? Who's being beat up? All these things right now. Get it on television. Get it in the papers. Get it everywhere so people know this is a despicable, despicable government. This is a government that nobody should support. But you have guys like Senator Warnock says nothing. You have all these Democrats saying nothing because they're okay with socialism. They're in for socialism. That's not where this country is. Let me tell you, we do a lot of polls. It's not where this country is. Country does not believe in socialism. They're anti-socialism.
I have not seen AOC anywhere. I saw Bernie Sanders put out a tepid statement. He's not anywhere. They're trying to pass $3.5 trillion. The Texas legislators are doing their stunt, and no one is focused on this, Senator. So I applaud you doing that. In terms of President Biden, his DHS secretary made this astonishing statement about people fleeing Cuba. Apparently, anyone is welcome in the United States via an open border, except Cubans.
Right. You know, it's fascinating. So he completely opens the southern border. I mean, all of our borders should be secure, not just some of our borders. Our borders should be secure all around this whole country. And we want legal immigration. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense what Mayorkas said. We're not going to allow somebody to come by boat, but if you can get to the southern border, you can just walk across. That's fine.
Now, I understand that you and Senator Rubio agree. If they try and do another boat lift as happened in 94, there ought to be extraordinary sanctions on Cuba for using desperation of people. We don't want people on rafts, but if they do get on a raft, they ought to be welcome in the United States. It's a complex proposition to explain, but that's it. We don't want them doing that. A lot of people will die. A lot of people died in that boat lift in 1994.
I know. Yeah, you feel so sorry. But just think, if Joe Biden would do his job right now, if he would start standing up and every day talk about this and get world leaders to talk about this, we've got the best opportunity in decades to get freedom, democracy in Cuba and help it expand all across Latin America. Joe Biden, where are you? Show up.
And it could be Kamala Harris. It could be Secretary of State Blinken. It's all the former Secretary of State Pompeo. All the people who are running for president on the Republican side are out there doing it, but the president is missing in action. I want to ask you one quick unrelated question, Senator, and that is the $3.5 trillion that Bernie Sanders. Look, we got a barbecue on inflation going right now. That's lighter fluid. It's like when the kid gets the lighter fluid and pours it onto the barbecue and you get that big explosion. They're not going to do that, are they? This country can't afford that.
Well, first off, they're going to try to do it. The Democrats are absolutely responsible for the fact that your dollar doesn't go as far. 5% CPI increase in the last 12 months, that means your dollar only buys 95 cents of what it could buy a year ago. And if you look at stock, it's going down. Producer price index was up 7%. So I like infrastructure, but here's what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to get Republicans to sign on to a bill for infrastructure that they still have won't tell us how it's paid for, and it gives the Democrats cover to spend another $3.5 trillion. I think if you vote for an infrastructure bill, you're voting for $3.5 trillion of complete wasteful spending.
And it'll go to 6.5%, 7%. Senator Rick Scott, thank you for joining us. I love your state. I hope people come down here from all of the media and cover what's going on in Cuba. Keep leading the fight. Keep getting every Republican on the record talking about it, not just you and Senator Rubio and Senator Cruz. Senator Cotton did it yesterday, but every Republican ought to be out there talking about freedom. Senator Rick Scott, thank you. Follow him on Twitter at SEN Rick Scott, great leader of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Hugh Hewitt here, Morning Glory America. I am in the free state of Florida, and this is the last day that I'm here at the Alliance Defending Freedom Conference, adflegal.org/Hugh. This segment, I'm joined by my friend Alex Gray. He's a senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. He's a member of the Nixon Seminar as well, nixonseminar.com. Former deputy assistant to President Trump, chief of staff at the White House National Security Council from 2019 to 2021, and now an essayist in the National Review about China. The federal government can't counter China on its own. Important piece. We're going to talk about it. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Hey, Hugh. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad to have, before I move to the specifics of the essay at NRO, China is, I expect, going to try and move into Cuba with Belt and Road to bail out the faltering regime. Am I paranoid to expect them to show up there?
No, you're 100% right. And they've been in Cuba in different forms for a long time, providing economic assistance, providing training, providing all sorts of support to the Castro and post-Castro regime. So you're totally consistent with not only their modus operandi in Cuba, but in the Western Hemisphere more generally. And it's something that, frankly, you know, we have a leadership role historically in the region, and we've, for too many decades, we've allowed that that leadership role to go into abeyance. And hopefully the Biden administration will keep a very close eye on what's going on 90 miles from our shore.
We're coming up on the 60th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, and I just think a replay is going to be inevitable, but it's going to have CCP on the missiles, not USSR. And I tell people that's not nuts, but given your article on China's vast efforts to infiltrate the United States, it just seems like the soft underbelly is Cuba, and if they offer to do a Belt and Road initiative with one of their ports, it just basically brings the People's Liberation Army Navy, PLAN, into the Caribbean.
Yeah, look, we've seen this all over the world. You know, I've done a lot of work in the Pacific Islands, and we've seen this where the Chinese will come in through Belt and Road. They'll offer unsustainable debt terms. They'll get into a port. It'll be sold as a civilian port, but we both know it's very easy to go from a ostensibly civilian port infrastructure project to a dual use project that quickly has military dimensions. They now have a base in Djibouti. They've explored having bases all over the Western Pacific. Now they're talking about other parts of Africa. The Caribbean's an obvious choice. So there's not much of a step between One Belt, One Road and an active potential military presence.
Yeah, One Belt, One Road, One Submarine Pen, and we have an international crisis. Let's move to your NRO piece, Alex. You worked for years with Ambassador Robert O'Brien, frequent guest on the show, co-chair of the Nixon Seminar. And one of those efforts was to try and counter the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to influence American investment things like the Thrift Savings Plan, TSP, which the federal government employees know very well. We actually put it into place when I was deputy director of OPM 1,000 years ago. I'm kind of amazed that the CCP can do this. I actually did not know that they could invest in our state and federal pension funds. My guess is a lot of people don't know that.
Well, you know, a lot of what the problem on the state level particularly is, you know, the type of scrutiny that Ambassador O'Brien and Larry Kudlow brought to the TSP program just hasn't been given at the state level. So, you know, we have examples in New York and in California, the public teacher pension plans were investing in Hikvision, which is the company that makes the surveillance technology that's used to oppress the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. The CalPERS, the California State Employee Retirement Program, has been investing in companies that have direct ties to the People's Liberation Army. So, you know, this has been going on in big states in really important ways, and very little scrutiny has been given to it. And so what I'm calling for is kind of comprehensive commissions that governors and legislatures will stand up at the state level to try and take a look at how their individual state capitals are interacting with China. It's not just a federal issue. It's not just something Washington and the Congress can do. Individual states have to take ownership of their facet of the relationship.
100% agree. And every governor could do that. And transparency is the cure here. But I would also add to this, if you're my alma mater, Harvard, and you've got a $40 billion endowment, you ought to have specialists in CCP influence operations auditing your investments to see where they are vulnerable to exploitation by what is an influence operation unlike any other. Josh Rogan detailed it in his book, Chaos Under Heaven. I'm sure you're aware of it, and I'm not overstating it. I expect superpowers to do this. I don't expect their rivals to not care.
Well, that's absolutely right. And the influence operations are incredibly vast, and they're multifaceted. You know, you're in Florida today. Governor DeSantis has been a leader on this. He signed a piece of legislation that would crack down on IP theft at state universities, which is a huge way in which the Chinese have gained advantage over us by taking trillions of dollars of our IP and targeting state universities to do it through the researchers that come in, sponsored often by the Chinese Communist Party. And the governor has also cracked down on Confucius Institutes and banned them from state universities in Florida, which is another, you know, a pure influence operation that's actually used on American college campuses to keep track of Chinese nationals who are there to study. It's basically used as a way to keep political tabs on Chinese abroad. So, you know, there's a really vast influence operation. And there's no reason that American states, American universities have to be party to it. And that's the role of every governor and every state legislature to make sure they're not.
Now, on the private endowment side, the state governors can indeed force audits of everything. They can put together these commissions to investigate influence operations. What ought a private endowment to do, Alex, if they are afraid that their programming is in some way influenced or subverted by the CCP? And again, this is not some HBO series, The Americans. I did this in the 80s about the Soviets and the Cubans and the East Germans. They were everywhere. I just imagine the CCP's efforts dwarf those of the old Soviet Union.
Well, you know this from that era. These are called active measures. That's what the Soviets called them. And the CCP still follows that playbook, and so do their proxies in places like Cuba and Venezuela. So this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a very sophisticated part of espionage and state and really Chinese statecraft. So there's nothing super secretive about this. What we need to do as, you know, all levels of society, whether it's governments, it's private entities, it's nonprofit organizations, is to be asking ourselves, you know, something is too good to be true. It probably is. And there's no reason why we should be allowing entities to come into our, you know, Chinese affiliated entities or entities we don't have enough scrutiny on to come into different facets of our society without really asking tough questions. And, you know, the FBI over the last 5 or so years has gotten a lot better at helping and reaching out to particularly universities who have been kind of the lagging indicator in this, and helping them do some deep dives into who's affiliating with them, where is some of the money coming from that kind of magically shows up on campus. So I think we still need to do a better job, particularly, which is the point of my piece, at the state and local level, where often you'll have elected officials who are just happy to have money show up on their doorstep without asking the tough questions.
Oh, last question, Alex Ray. We know that the CCP does not use generally accepted accounting practices in the People's Republic of China. That not only puts American investors at risk of collapse and subterfuge in Chinese companies, it is an unfair advantage for American companies. Have American companies begun to wake up to the fact that they need to understand where the gap is creating a gap? That is an unfair advantage for their Chinese competitors and the Chinese listed companies because they're not living up to the standards of American investment?
Look, I've heard from plenty of corporate executives who understand that. But the challenge is if you're quarter to quarter trying to turn a profit and you're trying to take care of your investors and your shareholders, it's very difficult to extricate yourself from the China market because it's a big shiny bauble still. And the challenge is, as you laid out, when we're making investments through our pension funds, through the hard earned savings of American retirees, and we're investing it in China, it's not just putting that savings at risk, we're also putting our national security at risk because we're investing, oftentimes, as in the case of CalPERS, we're investing in entities that have direct ties to China's military modernization. And that's a double-pronged threat.
Doubled whammy. Alex Gray, former chief of staff, the National Security Council, the pieces in National Review. I tweeted it out. Thank you, Alex. Coming right back, American Florida. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Senator Jim Talent, former senator from Missouri. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm fine, you.
It's an unusual week. Cuba is yearning to be free, and we are ignoring it. Afghanistan is being abandoned, and George W. Bush came out and said the women of Afghanistan will be slaughtered. And General Milley and others are, General Milley and others are contributing to gossipy books about the last administration. And the Navy gets a report saying they're not prepared for battle at sea. It's really been a bad week for the Department of Defense.
I agree, although that Navy report certainly did not surprise me. I mean, we're in what Jerry Hendricks calls the material death spiral, where we deploy these ships for so long, you, that they cannot go through their maintenance and training cycles. And when you do that for a long period of time, well, maintenance and training suffer, right? And that has an impact on operational readiness. So I would have been surprised, frankly, if the report did not say that or something like that. And it's extremely concerning. The force is too small. It doesn't have the capabilities it needs. And I'm concerned that we're not ready with what we do have.
So we've got to start somewhere. And starting somewhere to me means the Navy, because it's the obvious point of the sword in any conflict with the CCP. I expect the CCP, by the way, to try and bail out Cuba. I'm thinking Cuban Missile Crisis 2.0. And they're going to come in with Belt and Road in exchange for, submarine pens in the Caribbean. Do you think I'm alarmist?
Oh, not at all. They're active everywhere, including in Latin and South America. It's not been as big a priority for them so far as, for example, Africa, but they can operate opportunistically. They've already been active in helping the Cubans, for example, with their surveillance system. I think Marco Rubio said that to you the other day, and he's right. So, no, I think we have to be aware of that. I admire so much your publicizing what they're doing. I mean, both humanity and policy demands that we support these protesters. It just comes down to that.
Well, I'm astonished by Western media, Jim Talent. I remember Western media when Eastern Europe was yearning to be free, when the Pope went to Poland in 81, 82. I remember all that stuff. We're following Texas legislators with beer on private planes, and we're not paying attention to people being shot in Cuba.
Yeah, and you would know better than I whether this is because of the sort of increasingly unrealistic romanticism they felt towards Castro in Cuba, or whether it's because of the decline in the press in general. You know what I mean? Just the ability to do that kind of reporting and the desire to do it. I get a sense that it's declined in journalism in general. But
my bottom line, I don't think it rates, meaning that viewers would rather see anti or pro Trump pieces, which can be worked into the voting Texas legislator's story, and it's hard to work Trump into Cuba stories because Trump was right on Cuba and Biden has recognized he's right about Cuba. And so if you're trying to get ratings, pro or anti-Trump, you don't want to do the Cuba story. It's astonishing to me.
That could be true, but I'll tell you, the when you talk about the viewers, I guess you're talking about the activists, because I don't know who else is watching some of those channels, right? And there aren't that many of them. People are going to have reason to get interested in the next few years. We are entering a period of consequences, as Churchill said. The failure to sustain our capabilities, really bad policy decisions. We have empowered the aggressors in our adversaries, and they are moving.
Yeah, President Obama famously said, if you can win, you should. He was referring to his first race for the Chicago State Senate. If you can run and you can win, you should. I have to think President General Secretary Xi is looking at the world and thinking, if I can take this or that, I should. Right? As a CCP leader, as a confirmed Marxist-Leninist, he looks at what they call the correlation of forces, given the reports that we have and the retreat that we're in, and says now is the best time ever.
Yeah, and, you know, we have the Davidson window, right? In other words, he said, look, he's looking at by 2027 Taiwan, and I think he's looking at the right time frame. As I said before, they will be opportunistic. Once they have initial invasion capability, which arguably they already do, it just depends on how much sea lift they have. I think they could move opportunistically. And then the other thing, if you're China, you're looking at things, say, 10 years out or 12 years out, demographic changes, for example, which are going to be very difficult for them to deal with. They may feel like they have a window, or they may be concerned that by 8 or 10 years from now, we'll have our act together and we'll have technologies and capabilities that will make aggression more difficult for them. So, yeah, I'm very concerned, and I'm not being hyperbolic here.
We've got hypersonics in their nascent stage, and so that changes the battlefield again because ours will be better than theirs. But I'm looking right now at Cuba because if they want to outflank us, Jim, that's the killer move, right?
And they draw conclusions from what we do or don't do about our will, and they're looking at this. Yeah.
Yeah, President Biden not being in Miami is actually a matter of significance to Beijing. Jim Talent, good to see you. Follow my Twitter at Jim Talent. Follow me to hour number 3 of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt in the free state of Florida for one more day. I'll be back inside the Beltway tomorrow. But today, the House Appropriations Committee is taking up the defense spending for next year. And my friend Ken Calvert, the ranking Republican on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, joins me. He is a California congressman from Riverside. Good morning, Congressman Calvert. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be on with you.
I want to give a little context here by reading a story from yesterday's United States Naval Institute. Navy officials told a Key House panel this week that by creating a different mix of aircraft in the future carrier air ring, the service could shave 5 years off the timetable to close the shortfall in its strike fighter aircraft inventory. What they're going to do is, instead of having two squadrons of 10 fighters per carrier, they're going to have one with 14. That doesn't actually close any gap at all, Congressman. That's rearranging deck chairs on the carrier.
Now that's called subtraction.
Yeah.
That's not addition.
Now that's just indicative of the general problem. Would you outline that the Biden administration is cutting real defense spending?
That's right. This year we're at about $696 billion for defense, and what they're proposing is a $706 billion budget this year for next fiscal year, which doesn't even keep up with inflation. And they're figuring 2%. We're actually thinking that it's going to be closer to 3.5%.
I think you're low.
That's a cut.
That is a cut. Now, what are you going to argue for in an era, by the way, of $1 trillion of spending? Bernie Sanders has a $3.5 trillion bill. There's infrastructure. Why is defense the orphan of the year of excess in the United States?
Well, it's simple. The Democrats, especially the progressives, hate defense spending. They want to spend money in every other account except that. We're looking at, by the way, just on normal appropriations, some increases in domestic spending bills, 24% after inflation, 24%. And they want to cut defense. And that's not going to happen here. We're not going to go along with that. They can't pass an appropriation bill without Republican support, in my opinion. And so they're going to have to bring down these domestic spending levels, bring up defense, and put the Hyde language back in, or we're just not going to have a deal.
Now, we need more of everything, but I think we especially need more of the Navy, Congressman. And I know I upset a lot of my Army friends out there, but China is the number one threat. We need ships and airplanes. We need sailors and submarines. Is that going to be line itemed into the appropriations bill?
Well, not now. I mean, we were looking to go to a 355 ship building plan under the national defense policy that Mattis and Trump had laid down. But now we'll be lucky to get to 305 ships. And as you know, China's already at 360 surface warships. And if you add in their coastal ships, they're up to 700. So we're way outgunned in Navy ships and personnel and everything else.
Now, we need to plus up, obviously. That is a technical term for meaning spending more. Some of the requests by the administration, which ones do you think will get plussed up today on the House side, at least?
Well, we marked the bill yesterday. Nothing really got plussed up other than they did add one Ollie Burke destroyer, which is nice, but that only puts us up at 8 ships. The Chinese are building 2 ships per month. And they are building a new aircraft carrier right now, which is almost the size of the Ford class carrier. It's about 50 some feet shorter. But other than that, they've stole the technology. They got electromagnetic launch. That's being built right outside of Shanghai right now. And so we're in a deficit just about every place: planes, ships, missiles, satellites. And quite frankly, China is not just a near peer threat; they're a peer threat. They have caught up with us, and in some instances, are ahead of us.
Now, do we have the capacity to add even more? I'm very glad to hear that about the Burke. I did not know that. My Navy and Marine Corps friends tell me the number one necessity is destroyers in this era and submarines. Is there any capacity in the shipyards of America to do more this cycle?
It's going to be difficult because the shipyards are totally full. We need to reassess our shipbuilding capability in the United States, build and rehab the existing ship facilities we do have, and to get these numbers up. We've neglected 20 years of war. We've neglected a lot of things, and shipbuilding is probably on top of the list.
Now, Congressman Calvert, in the infrastructure bill, is any of that for, say, reopening one of the closed shipyards or expanding one of the existing ones? That's genuine, honest-to-goodness infrastructure that we desperately need. Is anyone on the Democratic side thinking, these are great jobs, these are electrician and technician and 21st century CAD design? It's just the stuff that people want to do.
Yeah, I would hope so. We haven't seen, as you know, the details of the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill. Whether or not they're going to put a shipbuilding facilities in that or not. As of now, I don't know. I would hope so, but I don't know if any of this is going to pass. This whole $3.5 trillion thing coming down the pike, I just don't know if they have the support to pass all this. This is, talk about 3.5% inflation. If that passes, my goodness.
Well, you know, Congressman, I know that there is a bipartisan spirit on HASC, and sometimes there is a bipartisan at House Armed Services Committee for the benefit of the Steelers fans, and sometimes they're bipartisan on the defense appropriation. And they're good Democrats on defense, like Elaine Loria, but they all have to be beaten. Every Democrat has to be beaten. They are putting our country into a 1930-style hole, and we're not going to be able to get out of it. And I mean, I'm not alarmist. I'd like you to check me if I am. We just got to beat every Democrat everywhere because they will not spend the money the country needs.
No, and you're right. I mean, we are now in a precarious situation. China, quite frankly, if they moved on Taiwan tomorrow, I'm not sure if we have the plans or the military strength to do anything about it. And we're not prepared to fight tonight as we should be. And we've got to turn this around as rapidly as possible.
Are the chiefs, the joint chiefs, are they gagged? I just don't see them out there making the argument I know that they believe in. I know that they know the problems. They study the problems all the time. But will they say it?
No. They're under orders to defend the budget they have. But you know, looking at their body language, and I know them, almost all of them, very well over the years, they know the truth. Their own national defense policy lays down a 3-5% per year net inflation increase in order just to maintain some level of parity.
Well, I really don't know what you're going to accomplish in this process, Congressman, other than call everyone's attention to it. I've been talking to people this morning. I expect Cuba to continue to convulse, but I also expect the Chinese to show up with a Belt and Road Initiative to bail out that government, and we're not going to have an answer for that. Does anyone talk about Cuba Missile Crisis 2.0, but this time with CCP on the hulls?
Oh, I was with Mario Diaz-Valer last night, and obviously he was telling me some of the horrific things that are going on with the Cuban people right now. The administration, other than lip service, is doing nothing about it.
If you've seen the lip service, you're a better sleuth than I am. I can't find the lip service since Monday. They've been on radio silence Tuesday, Wednesday, and this morning.
Yeah. In the meantime, as you probably know, mass executions are taking place in Cuba. And
yes.
This is a horrific situation, and we've got to do something about it today. I mean, not tomorrow, today. We got a problem in Afghanistan. That's the same thing. I mean, we got problems all over the world.
No, and we're not going to solve it by prayer, although we got to pray. We need some money. And is there any way, this is the last question, any way that this budget gets improved on but between now and its passing for defense?
If they don't bring down domestic spending and bring up defense spending and put the Hyde language back in, we don't have a deal. Then we'll be under a continuing resolution. And that'll be the Trump budget, ironically. Going into the next fiscal year. I don't think the Democrats want that. So hopefully they'll come to the table and we can make a deal.
Is the Trump budget better than their budget?
Yeah, quite frankly. I mean, we're better off to go with the Trump budget right now than what they're proposing.
I mean, I hope you just hammer your Democratic colleagues. They're all going to lose. They're going to get wiped out. The American people don't want to be weak, Congressman. Do you agree with that? When you go back to Riverside, do you hear that?
Absolutely. People understand that weakness is provocative, as Ronald Reagan used to say, and we cannot afford to have a weak nation.
Congressman Ken Calvert, always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter at Ken Calvert. Keep up the good fight. He's one of the good guys fighting to make sure that the military gets the money it absolutely needs. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.